This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Good morning and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. That's 855-75-CIVIC. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good, Earl. How are you?
All right, man. It's maybe the last reprieve of good weather. 70s today.
Yeah, it's going to be nice. Got to soak it in for as long as it lasts.
Yeah, so we've got a lot of great information lined up for you. As always, it is Wednesday, so that means a new segment that's on the show that I am getting a lot of conversation about here in the city of Milwaukee, that people are really concerned about it, and it is about the, you know, lead water issue that has been an ongoing problem in the city of Milwaukee ever since a loudmouth named Robert Miranda began to, you know, create, you know, some truths. And he took on, you know, how people say you should never take on City Hall because you'll never win. Well, Robert Miranda and others took on City Hall, and they won. And so, you know, we are every Wednesday at this hour, we are going to have on just a great group of people who have dedicated their lives here recently to waking up the people of this nation about the serious. Issue with lead in the water. And I want to welcome back Dr. Loom Brenidu, and she is with the campaign for lead in the water. And also,
good morning, Earl.
And also Mr. Paul Swartz, who is the founder of the campaign for lead free water. Good morning to you, sir. And Dr. Loom Brenidu is the co-founder of that, and then none other than Robert Miranda, my good friend of Flat. Good morning to you, Robert. How you doing, man?
Hey, good morning, Earl. How are you? I'm out here enjoying the weather. Decided to sit out in the park, and for some reason, I don't know if I'm able to get the camera going, but that's okay. No. As long as you can hear me, we're fine.
No, man, we know your beautiful face. If people don't know it by now, they can go on. Calvin, where is the site that they can go on to find archives of this conversation?
Yeah, so you can go on civicmedia.us/shows to find all of the shows in podcast form. You can also find those on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. You can also watch back the video stream, if you would like, on YouTube, on Civic Media or the Earl Ingram Show YouTube channel.
All right, let's have at it. Milwaukee children should be tested more often for lead. City says early detection is key. This is in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, October 24th. Let me read a couple paragraphs, Robert, and then turn it over to you guys. The Milwaukee Health Department has made its lead testing guidelines more rigorous in a push to increase testing of young children citywide and detect more lead exposure cases. The department recommends all children living in the city be tested for lead at least 3 times before their third birthday at 12 months, 18 months, and 2 years old. Now it's adding a recommendation they be tested at ages 3, 4, and 5 years old as well, previously, the department didn't recommend annual testing after 2 years of age unless child tested positive for elevated blood levels. I guess I want to say to you guys is that's an amazing statement for a city to make that has refused to address this issue. And all of the generations of children who have been poisoned and now are adults and going through difficult lives, and now the city, Robert, is basically admitting their fault. You say what, sir?
Well, kudos to the city. I am very pleased that such an announcement actually is made, this being the National Lead Poisoning Prevention Week, came out making the city on a national level do a little headline during this very important week. And, you know, I do pat the city on the back and give my compliments to the folks over at the health department and the mayor's office for coming out with, I think, is probably one of this nation's most extensive efforts to really identify and help our children at an early age. But I, you know, there is a but. There is a but, and I think that there is a need to make a couple of adjustments to the announcement of the health department. I think we can do a little better. I think we should do a little better.
And,
you know, I think that in the announcement that the city made recently in the Journal Sentinel, while they are identifying, you know, children on 12 above to be tested and early and a more consistent basis, my concern is that there are two populations of the city that are going to be missed in this whole thing. And the concern that I have...
Hey, Robert, we are having trouble with you and your microphone going up and down. And so kind of work on that. We'll go to you, Mr. Schwartz. You say what about this finding? Can't hear you, sir. You're on mute. Yes, sir.
Sorry about the technical difficulties.
Go ahead.
The first thing, since we can't really hear Robert yet, is to say that we are grateful that the city has increased the level of testing and to incorporate some later years. And that's a really important step forward. And the admission that there hasn't been enough done to surveil the damage that's been done in our community and that we're going to improve it moving forward is really important. But as Robert was trying to say, there's a big but. And the but is that we really don't have the still don't have the proper understanding of what blood lead testing means and what it doesn't mean, what it tells us and doesn't tell us about the prevalence of lead exposure amongst our children and other populations. And a good example of what's missing is that the most vulnerable population, those fetuses that are in development in their mother's wombs, who are subject to lead coming from the water through the mom, and little kids, especially newborns who are fed with formula, aren't really captured in the current testing regime. And that blood lead testing really, you know, to capture what's actually going on in the population, you almost literally have to test people about every 30 days to understand what the exposure is. And for water, because we have both low-level chronic exposure across the city, even more than the 2,000 homes that have lead paint, soil, and dust, but across almost every building. Water, when it comes out of the tap, especially lead particles, come out sort of erratically or randomly. Our blood lead testing regime wouldn't really capture that the way it's constructed now in Milwaukee, or frankly, in other cities and towns in Wisconsin or across the Midwest or the nation.
Dr. Lumbrinidu, your thoughts?
Yeah, I would like to second what Robert and my colleague Paul Schwartz also has said. There are really two things that we want to be looking at. The first is which populations are being included and excluded from this more frequent blood lead level screening recommendation. And as both of my colleagues have said, the populations most vulnerable to lead in drinking water, developing fetuses and infants, especially infants dependent on reconstituted formula, those populations are excluded from this more frequent blood lead level screening recommendation. In addition, of course, again, as my colleague Paul said, is that it's really important as recommendations for blood lead level screening are disclosed and disseminated to state the limitations of blood lead level screening. And so by testing people once a year, you know, and that's going to be in the best case scenario, we are still risking missing exposure, certainly from lead in drinking water, which can be erratic. And by the time you test, the lead in blood might be far lower than it was originally, or it might be gone altogether. And the last thing I'd like to say is, Earl, you started by talking about how early, you know, the announcement says that early detection is key, and that is right. But early prevention is even more key. And so it's so important to be talking about prevention as we are, of course, talking about blood lead level screening.
All right. 855-752-4842. It is Wednesday, so we are joined, you know, as now always, by those who are concerned and about lead-free water. 855-752-4842. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842, 855-752-4842. It is Lead-Free Water Day, and I'm joined by Dr. Lumbrinidu. She is the co-founder of Lead-Free Water, co-founder Mr. Peter Schwartz, Campaign for Lead Free Water, Robert Miranda of FLAC. Robert, are you there?
Yes. Can you hear me, Earl?
Yeah, we can hear you fine now, man. So you kind of wanted to take this, and we talked about this information that has been released at the city level, and so there's some things you want to discuss and the direction you want to go, so have at it.
Yeah, the message so far from my colleagues is spot on. I think that what we want to, again, acknowledge the fact that there is a real appreciation for the effort of the city to move in this direction. However, there can be more improvements to this. It doesn't really take much for the city to make those improvements to get really to the populations that right now the city has missed in this new upgrade of blood lead level testing that they're promoting at this time. And, you know, I think that the idea that the city has been focused on for many years, especially in the last decade, is that they've always concentrated a lot on blood lead levels rising in children, when a lot of the children, they say, are being contaminated because of lead paint, soil, and dust. You know, and that's, you know, basically like the kind of hand-to-mouth activity that they're always constantly talking about. But they don't realize that, you know, that has limitations. That argument of lead paint, soil, and dust being the most dangerous part of lead blood poisoning in the city of Milwaukee is totally inaccurate. It's not supported scientifically by research, by data. It is just a kind of narrative that the city has had for the last four decades that it needs to get away from. It completely ignores the fact that, you know, a lot of the activity of lead blood poisoning that occurs in children now, especially after they're 4, 5 years old, 6 years old, really comes from drinking and eating. And drinking and eating usually entails water, drinking water from the tap, food that is made with water from the tap. And so, you know, the city needs to get away from this idea of hand-to-mouth issue and go to the notion of drink and eat. Because if they continue to put out there that the most dangerous, the most primary source of lead blood poisoning in the city is lead-based paint, soil, and dust, they're not really informing the community accurately on the blood lead levels that are in our community constantly rising. That they need to look at the data much more thoroughly and gather that data much more thoroughly and do the kind of peer-reviewed study on this matter and just basically say, you know, lead paint, soil, and dust is a source, but to come out and constantly say that it's a primary, it's the main, it's the most dangerous, that's misleading. That's misinformation to the public.
Dr. Loom. Go ahead, Robert.
And it takes away from the people and the communities need to really be vigilant about what they do with the tap water and how they deal with the tap water. And the city should be focused on pushing more along the lines of, we need to really push for filters in our usage in our community, rather than just say lead paint, soil, and dust is the primary issue, and which I totally disagree with.
Dr. Lumbranidu, how accurate is your colleague Robert on his statement?
Yeah, I think Robert is really right to be raising this concern about the dominant narrative in Milwaukee and Wisconsin and really all across the country that places paint, soil, and dust as the consistently primary source of exposure for children. And labels drinking water as a minor or insignificant source, if it's mentioned at all. I think that for the past several decades, at least since the 1980s, that we have been trapped in a simplistic narrative that is based on circular logic. The circle here is the presumption that lead, paint, soil, and dust are the most important sources, which then lead to the development of surveillance programs, like, for example, the blood lead testing program in Milwaukee and in most cities across the country, that are really focused on the hand-to-mouth activity of children. So the testing is focused on the specific ages of greatest exposure to lead, paint, soil, and dust. And then we are creating data that are supporting our pre-existing assumptions.
So guys, hang on. Again, my guests are Paul Swartz, Dr. Yana Lumbranidu, and Robert Miranda, and they're talking about lead in the water. You can join us at 855-752-4842. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
Day after day, I'm more confused. Yet I look for the light through the pouring rain. You know that's a game that I hate to lose. I'm feeling the strain. Ain't it a shame? Oh, give me the beat, boys, and free my soul. I wanna get lost in your rock and roll and drift away. Oh, give me the beat, boys, and free my soul. I wanna get lost in your rock and roll and drift away.
All right, welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 855-752-4842. That's 855-752-4842. I'm joined by Dr. Lumbranidu, and she is the co-founder of Campaign for Lead Free Water. Also, Mr. Paul Swartz, he's a co-founder as well as a Campaign for Lead Free Water, and Robert Miranda Flack. And you know, Paul, before we go to you, you know, the just listening and reading the article from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel and all of the research that you guys have done to kind of force cities and our government to really look at this issue, something that they push back on. And yet, even in the face of that, they're still not bought into it 100%. You say what to that?
Yeah, you know, it's a really important point that it's been a long struggle to get our premier health agency, CDC, and the, you know, HHS, Health and Human Services, and others to sing from a songbook that is accurate and based on what the science tells us about exposure to lead and lead in water. And one of the things that I really want to say to echo something that my colleague Yana Lumbranidu put out there is that as much as blood lead testing will tell us, if we do it right, who's already been damaged permanently by the lead and water exposure, a really key message for everybody to get in communities in Milwaukee and Wisconsin and other places around the country is that we need to flip the script and prevent the harm before it starts from water, which is that we need to routinely use, for both drinking and cooking, point of use filters that have NSF 42 and 53 certification. And that should become a mantra out there in the community, so that people know that there's a technology that regularly, routinely gets you close to zero level of lead in your water if the filter is put in the right place, installed properly, maintained and operated properly. And this is a way to undermine the bad messaging and to bolster people's health in a primary way.
So Robert, let me ask you, does this, once a child or baby starts ingesting lead at a very young age, how long does it take before there's damage, or is there damage immediately once lead enters into your body, no matter how little it is?
That for me would be a difficult question to answer, because I'm not too sure of the damage that can be done. But I do know that when the lead enters into the body, lead tends to, in adults, stay within the blood for about 30 days. If they continue to ingest lead from external sources, it'll probably stay in the blood longer. But if it is not detected, usually that lead will then hibernate and find its way into bones and soft tissue. Now, where it becomes much more of a threat to fetuses is that when women who become pregnant have blood lead levels in their body that are high, and they don't know it. They don't get themselves tested to see if they have blood lead levels. When their body begins to stress during pregnancy, that lead releases from wherever it is in the body, gets back into the bloodstream, and goes and potentially, and basically can harm the fetus, where miscarriages or other issues that hurt or destroy the fetus can occur. The science and the health and all that stuff behind all that happens, I'm not too privy to, but I do know that the science would back the fact that as long as there's lead in the blood and that lead goes towards the fetus, that fetus has zero chance of surviving.
Dr. Lembri-Nidu, let me ask you, you guys talk about things that are critically important to educating the American people to this. Shouldn't there be PSAs? I mean, I see PSAs about paint chips. Why are there not PSAs about this? And is that one of the things that you are fighting for?
Yeah, this is such a good question, and this is absolutely one of the things that we are fighting for. Unfortunately, from the mid-1980s, when the Environmental Protection Agency started working on a federal regulation to control lead in drinking water, there was already within our government agencies, within the EPA, within the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, even within the environmental health and public health community, there was quite strong resistance to giving emphasis on lead in drinking water. It is difficult to understand why, but what we do know, and it is so easy to document, is that this resistance has translated to misleading messaging up to this day about the importance of drinking water. Let's just think about something that, you know, it's just a common sense fact. And that is that even though not all homes have lead paint, soil, and dust, and certainly not all residents in every one of these homes eats the paint, lead paint, soil, and dust, almost everybody has tap water running into their homes, and almost everybody drinks and uses this water to cook multiple times a day. So the idea that somehow leaded water is only a minor, if at all, source of exposure makes no logical sense. And certainly it is not backed by data which show that lead sources are multiple and that different children are exposed to different sources based on their environment. Some children are exposed to lead paint, soil, and dust first and foremost. Other children are exposed to lead in drinking water first and foremost, and lead in water is the primary or sole source of exposure for them. This is a complexity that is actually not that difficult to understand. It makes common sense, but you will not hear it very often from our medical community, public health community, or the government. We're really trapped in a flawed narrative, and I think we saw it in the media coverage about the Milwaukee announcement just the other day. The media coverage about children now being the recommendation being, you know, for more frequent testing, barely mentioned drinking water, despite all the lead laterals, in Milwaukee, and despite all of the lead-bearing plumbing inside homes and inside almost every building in Milwaukee. And that is truly astonishing.
So, Paul, if you take this to its conclusion, so the science that you guys are looking at, the city scientists are pushing back against your scientific finds, and so how do you balance that? If the city says, well, okay, so your scientists have, this is what they say, this is what they prove, but our scientists are seeing something completely different. And so how do you reconcile between the two? And as long as there's this battle, will there ever be a solution that's satisfying to the citizenry?
Yeah, thanks, Earl, for that question. I think it's at the crux of a lot of the struggle that communities have had with the folks like the Milwaukee Health Department and state agencies and public health officials across the country. There's been a punching down, a ghosting, and a silencing of people in the community who are questioning this official narrative. And it's just really clear that in the science that what they're saying is not taking into account the complexities that my colleague Yana Lambrini-Du has put out there. I think what we would ask the health department and others to do is to show the science behind their assumptions, show the proof that lead in water is not a primary or sole source for some segments of the population, and that there's, while there's certainly more to be done, reducing the exposures to paint, soil, and dust and the lead that's in them in many homes in Milwaukee, we need, if we're going to call a home lead-free, and if we're going to be really looking at how to end lead exposure, we need to be understanding what's going on with water in a really different way, and messaging to people regularly that they need to take steps to protect themselves from the lead and water exposure now, and to accelerate how it is we get lead out of contact with water from the plumbing inside homes, which is a harder thing to do, but also from the lead laterals, which have been slow walked to this point in Milwaukee and lots of other cities. You know, this is a really important point that you make, Earl. And it's one of the reasons, because we're not sure that it's going to be easy to reconcile this difference in messaging and narrative, that we're saying people should protect themselves from the water exposure by using filters that have a certification for removal of soluble or dissolved lead and lead particles. And those are NSF 42 and 53 certifications. And you should be able to find those on the box of any filter that you buy, that you attach to your faucet, or that you put on the counter, or that you use in a travel mug or in a refrigerator.
So I wanted to make an announcement now for those in the listening audience that this is such a important issue that we are going to be doing some podcasts with you guys and our radio station, because this is so critically important. You know, when you talk about, it's kind of safe to say that the people who suffer the most are those who struggle economically and who do not have the ability to control their own destinies. And I want to ask you guys on the other side about whether or not people who own properties should have some culpability in making sure that the properties that they're renting either have those filters or, you know, have had the pipes removed. Guys, hang on. 855-752-4842. I'm here with the Lead-Free Water Group, and you can join us at that number. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
All right, welcome back to what unfortunately is the last few minutes of what I think is just a role that media needs to be playing. All forms of media, when you talk about issues like this, you know, that have such an overarching impact on the lives of human beings, that this should be right there at the top of the issues that we talk about in this society. And, you know, my hat's off to you guys again for taking on this fight and knowing that you don't unfortunately have a lot of allies when it comes to politicians. Because their responsibility should be looking out for what's in the best interest of the people. And when you live in a representative government, you that's who you have to rely on to make sure that these things are brought to the forefront and then petition them to do the right thing. Robert, I said before we went to break that the people who suffer the most are the poorest of the poor. And, you know, people own all sorts of properties. Shouldn't they have some liability or shouldn't they be responsible? I mean, it's their properties, and they should be responsible for the people they rent to if the people don't know any better. Am I off base?
No, you're not. You know, I've mentioned this many times before in the past for last few years. The responsibility of property owners for the contamination of lead in their houses as they're renting to families who basically are looking to shelter themselves and are expecting not only to be sheltered but to live in a safe environment. That responsibility really falls on the landlord and the homeowner to ensure that they do live in an environment that is safe. And clearly, yeah, lead paint, soil, and dust is not a safe environment, nor is having lead pipes in your house safe for the family. And it clearly puts in jeopardy the health of families. And so, yes, the responsibility of homeowners should be to inform families of the fact that there are lead pipes in the house. They should be required to provide filters for each tap at the house. They should be required to report in their leases that family sign that they have these lead pipes in their house. It's also the responsibility of government to provide certain incentives and support to homeowners, property owners, to move in the direction of removing these hazards from the house. And so, you know, when I asked for the city to come up with a plan not only on the removal of lead laterals, that plan should also include what are we going to offer homeowners and what are we going to do to get homeowners to incentivize them to remove these lead pipes from their premises. So, you know, the plan has got to be much more comprehensive in the city of Milwaukee in regards to removing this hazard than it currently is. And, you know, and touching on the media, you know, we've had issues with the media in this city many times, and the media tends to basically parrot a lot of what the government has to say. And you know, I don't know what's that all about, but I do know that in the past, when we started this fight with City Hall, we did have good media coverage in the beginning, and that's because a lot of this stuff was pretty new and it was exciting and the headlines were sexy and people were attracted to it. But then after a while, you know, the City Hall started getting smart and started sending their people out and talking to reporters and talking to editors and talking to managing producers and incentivizing them not to be publicizing as much as they do. And I know for a fact, because I've had several reporters tell me on a number of occasions that basically they've been told not to report on a lot of stuff that we are talking about, because the city has threatened many of these reporters by not providing them with scoops. So, get them first lead on first story.
So Dr. Yana, Robert, and Paul Schwartz, next week we're gonna have our conversations. Not only we're gonna be doing a show on Wednesday, but we will put together a platform where we can begin to do this via podcast, however many times we need to do it, and not be interrupted by, you know, commercial breaks and those kinds of things. And we're going to get this message out, and it needs to be spread. But thank you, guys. The time moves too fast. All right. Again next Wednesday. Up next, Mayor Cavalier Johnson from the city of Milwaukee and you on the Earl Ingram Show. Let your mind and your
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.